it's pretty easy for folks that are in more kind of strategic roles to look at data and be like, clearly this is what we should do. But it's like, have you actually gone and sat down and listened to a customer services like call to understand what's driving some of this? No, probably not. Go and do that.
Hello and welcome to the Shiny New Object podcast. My name is Tom Ollerton. I'm the founder of Automated Creative, the creative effectiveness ad tech platform. And this is a weekly podcast about the future of data-driven marketing. I'm in Uber's office in Amsterdam, very exciting, with Victoria Kerr, who is Director of Marketing, EMEA and APAC, Uber for Business. Vicky, for anyone who doesn't know you and what you do, can you give them a bit of background?
So hi, I'm Vicky and I head up marketing for Uber for Business for EMEA and APAC. So essentially Uber for Business is kind of a scale up within the bigger Uber org. And it's the B2B division. So it's about kind of wrapping up all of Uber's products and services, mainly on the core side. So like rides, for example, or Eats, and then for the most part, selling that into kind of mid-market and enterprise companies.
So in your career, what you do now and up to that point, I'm curious to know, what have you spent your own hard-earned money on that has been really powerful for you in your work?
So I'm going to start by saying this is absolutely not an ad, and you might know him, but if for anyone that hasn't heard of them, Mark Ritson is an amazing marketing professor and does a mini MBA in marketing with Marketing Week, and he also does a brand course as well. So during 2020 and 2021, I took advantage of the COVID era and spent my hard-earned cash doing those courses, and they were just an amazing investment for me, for sure. I think he does a really good job of cutting through some of the noise in our industry and really kind of giving folks a practical kind of application of our trade.
I'm impressed you paid for that yourself. That must have been no small investment from what I hear. So for someone who is on the fence about doing that course, I know it's been very popular, what are the kind of three things you like that's transformed my understanding of the industry? I mean, you talk about cutting through the noise, which is great, but like convince someone that they should do this course.
Well, I was saving a lot on not going out, right, in 2020. So I think firstly is definitely cutting through the noise. Like I think he does a really good job of making like engaging creative and content to really kind of drive home the principles of marketing. And I think it can be pretty easy to get lost in our industry. So I think he does a really good job of, you know, like I say, giving us reasonable frameworks, like pointing us in direction for great research. I just think it's super entertaining and really informative.
So moving on, what is your top data-driven marketing tip that you find yourself sharing most often or passing on to others?
Look, data is super important, essentially. And I've had the privilege to work in some very data-driven businesses with a lot of access to amazing data. So I think my first thing is that you really need to understand the data that you need that's going to give you good signal in order to make good decisions. In some places, it can be easy to get like analysis paralysis and spend hours and hours and hours on it. And actually, I'm not sure you get like the kind of increment mental insight. I'd also say don't look at data in silos. It's really important to have a holistic idea of what's going on. So it's really important to take your kind of signals from data and sense test them, whether it's like with research, for example, or even speaking to like from a B2B perspective, like sales teams or people in market, desk-based research, just to make sure that, you know, there's not anomalies in the data that might be sending you in the wrong direction.
So when you're separating signal from noise, how do you do that? Because we're getting increasing numbers of data signals from lots of different platforms. And I take your point about actually taking these data points out into the real world and testing them with various people on the team. But you know, you've got a dashboard with seven different graphs going on, and you've got different reports from different platforms. How do you know what is signal? How do you know what is noise? And what advice would you give to someone to be able to sift through that?
Oh, good question. Probably worth a lot of money, the answer to that question, I think. Look, I think some of it's, you know, trial and error, right? And you need to be able to, I think it's really important to work in places where you can experiment and test, you know, in small batches and then scale, find out what's working, what's not working. So that I think is really the thing. And like I say, I think it's really about not looking at things in silos. Like it can be really easy to go down rabbit holes with some data, but you need to hold yourself accountable and sense check things, like use the product yourself. Go, like I say, do research, you know, listen to customer or sales conversations. The tools are definitely there. I just think it's really important that folks don't only look at one source.
Can I ask you to be specific and give me an example of that? maybe not here, but in a past role where you've realized you were in a silo, or you went out and you tried a product, or help me understand where you had like that aha moment where you're like, I'm using too much data here. Actually, this is the thing that I need.
I think for me, it's been, and this is not Uber, by the way, but I would say it's been working with colleagues who are super, super data-driven that has really kind of made me enforce that we need to be more sensible about some of this stuff. Like actually my background, certainly early in my career, was pretty varied. Like I even did a stint in customer services when I was living in New Zealand. I've done sales like very early in my career. And I think that kind of gives me a bit of a unique insight to try and pull together the full customer journey, not just like looking at some of the data and making decisions based on that. So it's pretty easy for folks that are in more kind of strategic roles to look at data and be like, clearly this is what we should do. But it's like, have you actually gone and sat down and listened to a customer services like call to understand what's driving some of this? No, probably not. Go and do that.
So we're now going to talk about your shiny new object, which has a strange title that we've agreed on, which is B2B push and pull. So what is that? Can you give the audience just an overview of what you mean by that, and then we'll get into it?
Sure. I feel like B2B is a bit of a dirty word. So the push and the pull for me is really about, I think if I think about B2B marketing, which has kind of traditionally been, I think, a bit of a poor cousin from the consumer folks, there's two parts to it, or at least this for me is the push and the pull. So one is like, I think we're seeing a lot of innovation on the more traditional kind of demand generation side of things. The folks of, you know, kind of Salesforce or Squarespace, Super Bowl ads, like doing really kind of cool, innovative things, I'm sure based on data, to be able to grow awareness and consideration and that kind of thing. So I think there's some really promising things coming out of that. So that for me is the push. And then the pull is actually, I think we're seeing a real emergence of B2B marketers talking directly to end users to really kind of drive consideration and salience within the folks actually using their product. So if I think about that in a Uber for Business type context, that's talking directly to business writers so that they understand to like toggle over onto their business profile, and that we educate them on all the benefits of doing that. And then Uber for Business becomes an integral part of any business trip, as an example.
So first off, got to jump back one step. Why is B2B a dirty word?
Today, that was... I don't think a dirty word is maybe too strong, but I do think, like I say, we've kind of been the poor cousin, or maybe we haven't seen enough innovation come out of kind of our sector of marketing as we have with some of our kind of consumer counterparts. And I really think that that is starting to change, frankly. I think, like I say, we're seeing a lot more innovation with kind of digital tools like demand base, with, you know, kind of essentially, I think, working more and more with our consumer colleagues to understand what might be working, what might not be working, and where we can learn from there as well. And I just think it's an area that hasn't been that sexy for a long time. So I'm kind of glad that we're making it shinier.
So if someone's listening to this and they're like, right, okay, I've always just gone directly to procurement or gone straight to the person who signs the check. But what you're saying is actually you need to make the product and the service appeal to the end user that the license would benefit. So if someone's like, yes, I should do that, what are the steps to get started, and what are the common problems you have with that approach?
I think, I mean, you can't neglect the first audience, right? The folks that are making the buying decisions. That's like 101. Otherwise, you're not going to get it in the door. But I think the key kind of the thing you need to crack is who are the people that you're talking to. So when it comes to the end users, so really making sure that you've got all the insights on the folks that will be using your product, whether you're kind of a designer using a, you know, design software, whether you're a business traveler using Uber for Business. We have the benefit here, obviously, of having an abundance of data and understanding, certainly on the ride side of the business, kind of like trends and that kind of thing. So it could be that we're looking at our data and saying, okay, these segments of people are taking 8 airport trips in a month. Well, if they're doing that kind of like Tuesday to Thursday, there's a high propensity that they'll probably be a business user. So then we can start to think about how we might want to engage with them as a business user so that they can potentially use Uber for Business.
This episode of the Shiny New Object podcast is brought to you in partnership with Manfest. Whether it's live in London or streamed online to the global marketing community, you can always expect a distinctive and daring blend of fast-paced content, startup innovation pitches, and unconventional entertainment from Madfest events. You'll find me causing trouble on stage, recording live versions of this podcast, and sharing a beer with the nicest and most influential people in marketing. Check it out at www.madfestlondon.com. What is the action you want that end user to take? Is it like, go and hassle procurement? You need to close that loop, right? So you've got your top down, your awareness, whether that's a Super Bowl ad or something less audacious, and you're creating that awareness and the consideration of you as a service for the B2B buyer. But then you're putting out content or advertising to the people who will be using that service. What do you want them to do? Is it like apply for something? Help me understand how you finally squish those two approaches together, the push and the pull.
So I think with new orgs, it's about reducing friction in the sales cycle. So if folks know about you, that's significantly easier. Like, I know we're having a data-driven conversation, so unfortunately I don't have any numbers to back that up, but I just think from a common sense approach, it makes life a lot easier. Also for us on our side, we're a variable model basically. So it's, you know, if people don't use us, we don't make any money essentially. So we want to make sure that folks know when they're on a trip to come over to Uber for Business. And it might be, we add value through different things. So in the UK, for example, you can get like Avios points. We also have like streamlined expensing. Like, I don't want to give you the sales pitch on it, but there are advantages to using Uber for Business, which we want our end users to understand. And then it plays into, you know, one, making sure that usage is there. And two, if it's actually really adopted by a business, kind of churn is much less likely and that kind of thing.
So who does this well? Who do you look up to in this push and pull? Are you looking at, you mentioned Squarespace or Salesforce. Who are your heroes in this space, and has it ever worked on you?
Has it ever worked on me? Not that I can think of, but maybe they've just done a really good job and I don't know. Look, the best example I think I've seen of this is actually by Heinz. So Heinz have like an out of home category. So like the trade side of it. And I think it was actually an entry into Cannes. I'm not sure if it won or not. But in the US, they did, they worked with agency partners and they did an activation where end users, so customers like you or I, could go into like a diner or a restaurant. And if they didn't have Heinz, they weren't served Heinz, they could add a tip to the bill asking, like, I would pay more for Heinz for like a dollar. And then they put it on social and then the customer got reimbursed for that. So you're basically, the customer is sending a signal to that establishment, like, I would like Heinz. So that's the kind of the pull side of it, the more end user engagement, actually, this is what I want. And then they followed that up with some of the more traditional tactics from a marketing and sales perspective, where there was like a lot of outbound to those establishments to basically sell them Heinz. So I think it was a really smart use of kind of creating that momentum within the customer base and then them capturing that through more kind of traditional B2B motion.
Oh, that's so clever. Gosh. And what was the scale of that? Like, I can see the case study with that ukulele back in track about like, and some good looking people in a Californian cafe somewhere, yeah, bemoaning the fact that they haven't got ketchup. I'm somewhat dubious of definitely anything that wins an award. I'm like, really? Did that actually happen? Was that at scale, or was that, do you think it was just a localized test?
Well, I think, I mean, define scale, right? According to the case study, and you can take it up with them whether it's whether it's accurate or not. I think anyway, it was through New York and Chicago, and they spent, I think they reimbursed like 125K or something like that in tips, which, you know, depending on what your definition of scale is, I don't think is any mean feat.
All right, okay, you can have that, Heinz. Okay, so you're talking about innovation, you're seeing brands do Super Bowl ads, you've got this really creative stuff where people like Heinz are activating the end user to force a B2B decision. Where do you see this going? Like, if we do this podcast again in a year or 2 years, you say with the less popular, the unsexier side of the marketing coin, what are your predictions for how a B2B marketing and B2C starting to look a bit more similar?
I mean, I think that's just it. I think they will start to look more similar. So, you know, many of us, not everyone, but many of us are employed. Many of us work for businesses or are self-employed. And so I think there's just going to be less division of kind of like consumer versus business, essentially. I think if you look at some of the trends in kind of heading back to office and working from home and digital nomads and that kind of thing, I think the lines just blur. So increasingly, I think we're going to see B2B lean in more on what would probably have traditionally been perceived as more B2C channels. If you think about like Meta, for example, that kind of stuff. I mean, we already use it, but, you know, I just think there's going to be more and more innovation around that space to be like, why should it only be like, hey, we're just going to send you direct mail to your office? Like, I think we can just be smarter about it.
It reminds me, I was in a chat for another show that we do called Advertisers Watching Ads. And there was one of the guests in that chat was incredulous that they'd been targeted to buy a fancy car on LinkedIn. They were like, why on earth is this Daimler or someone like that advertising a car to me? And I thought, yeah, that seems totally ridiculous. But then someone in the group suggested, well, actually, this time of year is bonus season, right? So on LinkedIn, you can target very specifically. I don't need to tell you this, how good targeting on LinkedIn is, and to experience, location, seniority, and so on. So actually, a car ad at this time of year is great, but it doesn't feel right, does it? You know, there's nothing particularly premium about that ad, other than it's just got the logo in there, or is that just maybe in a traditionalist? And so I'm curious to know, like, if people are likely to do B2C on more traditional B2B channels, like how do you do that well, and vice versa? So you're a B2B marketer thinking, oh wow, Uber business, they're using Meta. Like, how do you show up in a social platform where people are used to a TikTok style experience? You know, like how do you show up that without being the kind of square B2B brand?
I think it goes back to knowing your audience, right? And making sure the targeting is right. And then making sure that you're talking about relevant stuff for them. And we also have the benefit of Uber of having a massive consumer brand. So obviously I think that helps us and we're able to leverage that. So it probably feels like less of a step for us than it might if you were like Cisco, for example, or somebody that's more kind of super, super traditional, like B2B. And look, we're all still learning. Like, you know, I'm not saying we've got it nailed by any stretch of the imagination, but I think that's the important thing. And that's one of the kind of, you know, great things about working at Uber is that you should test and learn and try and see what happens. And then, you know, as long as you're learning, let's keep going.
That's a beautiful way to finish it. Thank you so much. So if anyone wants to get in touch with you, where is the best place to do that? And what makes a great push and pull outreach to you?
Well, as a traditional B2B girl, I would say LinkedIn is probably the best place to be going. A good outreach is know your audience, context, and not a sales pitch.
Brilliant. So thanks so much for your time.
Hi, just before you go, I'd really appreciate it if you could take the time to write a review of the Shiny New Object podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever it's called these days, or whichever podcast provider you use. We're an indie podcast, so it would go a long way for us if you could just share the word and give us a bit of a support on those channels. That'd just be fantastic. If you haven't got time, that's also cool. And yeah, if you could tell your colleagues about the podcast, and also, if possible, don't forget to subscribe. And I'd love to hear your feedback. If you'd like to speak on the podcast or be a guest, or you think I'm asking the wrong questions, anything, I'd be super interested to hear what you think. So please email me at tom@automatedcreative.net. That's T-O-M at, I'm not going to bother spelling it. Anyway, you'll work it out. Thanks so much.